Congressman Bill Flores joins us this morning from Washington. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Scott. Great to be with you again.
We had a story that you may have heard during the news. The Kyle family gave 16,000 acres to Texas A&M a long time ago, and now the oil money that used to be $1 million a year is $1 million a month. It's in Loving.
Not too shabby.
It's not. It's in Loving County, and I know you were in the energy business. Did you ever have to go out to Loving County, Texas?
No, everything that our companies did were mostly focused offshore in the coastal areas of Texas and Louisiana. So never spent much time out in Loving County.
It just is amazing. There are 133 people live in that entire county, but per capita, obviously, it's they're the richest folks in America because there's a lot of oil money there. Hey, let's turn our attention to Washington, D.C. this morning. Ronny Jackson withdrew his name from consideration for the VA. Your thoughts there?
Well, it's a shame that we lost him. I was hoping to have another fighting Texas Aggie in the president's cabinet, but lots of allegations came out about Admiral Jackson over the last few days. I'm not sure what was true and what wasn't, but this seems to be a typical routine now, is that the president will put a name out there, and candidly, he's probably not doing a very good job of vetting the nominees that he's coming up with. And then the left goes and tries to dig up dirt on these folks, and then they just sort of kill them by a thousand cuts. And so Ronny decided to withdraw his name from consideration, and so the president will have to go back to the drawing board and find another VA secretary nominee. And whoever the president picks, I hope they will spend some time to vet that person pretty extensively so that we can make sure that that this type of activity won't happen again in terms of the malicious smears. Now it's going to happen, but hopefully you find somebody that's just not going to have as many weak spots. And I'm not saying Ronny Jackson ain't weak spots. We don't know. It's just they were just killing him with allegations.
Now, in a situation like this, again, to be quite honest with you, there are a whole bunch of folks in America who don't care who the secretary of fill in the blank is. But when we're talking the Veterans Administration, I mean, it's 350,000 employees and it's taking care of our veterans. So without having somebody in place, is the operation in any way changed before they actually have an official head, or do they still do the services and get the things done?
Well, they still do the services and get the things done, albeit some of it's done well, some of it's done less well. When I talk to the veterans in our district, that said, the president has an imprint that he wants to put on the direction of the VA. And without your political appointee in a position, it's harder to make those changes. It's harder to steer the organization in the direction the president wants it to go. The president has clearly made veterans a top priority, and so without having his person at the helm, it does make it harder to try to change the bureaucracy to fit the president's desires to put veterans first.
Congressman Bill Flores joining us from Washington, D.C. Of course, the Supreme Court's finished their term, but earlier this week, one of the last cases they heard had to do with redistricting of congressional districts in South Texas. Tell us what that means necessarily. Of course, we won't hear until October, but what does this mean for Texas, not only in the congressional level, but on the state level?
Well, I don't expect, as you know, I don't expect it to happen because of the timing of when the Supreme Court's issues its decisions. I wouldn't expect that it would have any impact on the November 2018 elections, but it could thereafter. But really, by the time you get that to that point, you're almost into redistricting again. But here's the situation. There are a bunch of allegations that were made by various groups in the state that the districts were not drawn fairly, and there were some allegations that they were drawn with racial bias. And so there was a court in San Antonio, a three-judge panel in San Antonio, that determined that there was racial bias in the maps. And so the court redrew the maps, and then a few years later, going back to 2015, they basically said, well, the maps we drew had racial intent as well, because the racial bias was in the original legislative maps. So they threw the maps out and tried to start and told the state that it had to draw new maps. The state went ahead and appealed that decision to the Supreme Court, and arguments were heard yesterday. It affects a few state house drawn districts for state representatives. And then there are two congressional districts where they said that there were racial bias. One is Lloyd Doggett's district, which covers part of Austin down to towards San Antonio, and then Blake Farenthold's district, well, the district that Blake Farenthold used to represent, which runs from just east of Austin over toward the Houston area. And so the court has said that those two districts are out, and then that case was heard yesterday. We'll get a decision in the next couple of months on what's going to happen there.
But now part of the fallout, could it not be that Texas once again falls under scrutiny of the federal government for anything that we do? And we just got out from under that problem just a couple of years ago.
That's correct. We could be under what's called judicial review under the Equal Voting Rights Act. But based on the prior decisions this court has made, I don't think they're going to be inclined to do that. First of all, I think it's when you actually dig into the case, I think it's going to be hard for them to prove racial bias. And I find it kind of fascinating that the three-judge panel down in San Antonio ruled that way, because it was their map that they drew.
Right.
That they suddenly threw out their own maps and had racial bias, and it was a pretty tortuous argument that they tried to use. So I really don't think that the court has tended to move away from this judicial review, because it's inherently unfair, because it typically applies to states that have gotten their acts together when it comes to voting rights, and it leaves out the states where you have more actual racial bias in the voting districts, particularly those up in the north.
Congress, the joint session of Congress heard the president of France speak this week. Presume you're there. You have any thoughts there?
Yeah, I was there, and I thought he did a really good job, and it's pretty impressive that he was able to deliver it in English.
Yeah.
He talked about the longstanding relationship among the French people and the American people, which goes back to our Revolutionary War back in the late 1700s, and the way we have fought together, not only in World War I and World War II, but also in the War on Terror. He did get off in some areas where I think he spent an inordinate amount of time where we just don't agree with the people of with the government of France. Mm-hmm. One is that he spent a lot of time talking about the Paris Accord, which is a flawed accord, and I think President Trump was right to pull out of that and to try to renegotiate a way to deal with climate goals that will really work other than the Paris Accord. And he spent a lot of time trying to talk about the Iran deal, which he thinks ought to be maintained, but it's another classic Obama failed deal, and it needs to be renegotiated. Now, he did come up with four pillars of a renegotiated deal, and three of those I thought were pretty smart. But again, I don't think it was a good idea to come over and sit in joint session of Congress and tell us how to run our business.
I guess he needed
sound bites. Because I don't think we'd do that in France.
He needed sound bites to take back to the home country, I suppose.
Probably so.
Anything legislatively this week to talk about?
Yes, the big deal that we have right now is the reauthorization of the Federal Aviation Administration. It has not been reauthorized on a long-term basis for several years. And so we have a five-year reauthorization bill up on the floor over the next 2 days. There are 116 amendments we're going to have to vote on over the next couple of days. So it's going to be a long, drawn-out affair. That said, it is a bipartisan bill. It does modernize the FAA and the air traffic control system. There was a last-minute push by the chairman of the Transportation Infrastructure Committee to put an amendment in there to move toward privatization of the air traffic control system. But about 40 of us as Republicans got together and blocked that, so he pulled it back out at the last minute. I thought it was kind of a last-minute effort to do something we thought was already dead. So it's going to come to the floor. It's going to be a clean reauthorization with some good 21st century modernizations that are needed badly.
All right. Congressman Bill Flores usually joins us on Wednesdays. You can hear the entire interview archived on the website at WTAW.com. Again, thanks for the time this morning.
You bet. Great talking to you. I'd ask our listeners to continue praying for our country, our military men and women, and our first responders.
Thank you, sir.